Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Toldot. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Toldot. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. I think we're going to dedicate our learning this week to the inhabitants of the southern towns of Israel who are currently suffering from repeated rocket fire the last few days, people in Sderot and Netivot, and we hope that our learning will give them some zechuyot, some merit, and that soon everything should return to its regular state of peace and calm. This week, in fact, we are going to talk about the south of Israel, and in particular we're going to talk about the middle patriarch. Not Abraham, not Jacob, but Isaac, Yitzchak. Because that is how this week's parsha begins, Ve'ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Abraham. This is the progeny of Isaac, the son of Abraham. And when we think about Yitzchak, if you take a straw poll, if you ask the people around you who know a little bit about the Bible, and you say, who is the most dramatic or who is your favorite of the patriarchs, I'm not sure that everybody would pick Yitzchak. In fact, his name means he will laugh. I wonder whether we think he is the funniest or the most jovial of the patriarchs, because Yitzchak sometimes strikes us as a character who is a little bit in the shadows, a character who, how should we say it? He's not necessarily the most flamboyant, the most dramatic, the most exciting of the Avot. One of the problems with Yitzchak is something which was expressed several years ago in a book, Biblical Images, by Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, where Steinsaltz addressed the question of Yitzchak's passivity or his sort of pallid character. And let me try and elaborate and explain what I mean by this. If we take all of the episodes that we know about Yitzchak, we see that he takes a rather backseat role. Let me try and elaborate. Of course, his birth, we can't really expect him to take an important role. He's passive, he's born. Okay, that's great. But then, in the story of the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, Isaac is bound, and the action is taken by his father Abraham. When it comes to finding a wife, so we have that dramatic scene, if we recall, when Jacob takes the stone which nobody can move and manages to push it off the well side, and he goes and dramatically and very romantically kisses Rachel. We remember, similarly, by a well side, we remember Moshe watering the flocks of Jethro's daughters and helping them out and gallantly saving them from their adversaries. And how about Yitzchak's meeting? How about Isaac's meeting with Rebekah at the well? Well, what can we say about that scene? Yitzchak, the bridegroom, is not there. In that classic scene where a person meets their beloved or their future wife at the well side, there is a surrogate. There is somebody, the slave of Abraham, who is sent in order to find a wife for Isaac. And where is Isaac? He is back home in the land of Israel, in Be'er Lachai Ro'i, somewhere in the wilderness. It says, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. Isaac went to converse in the field. We don't know quite what he was doing. Was he meditating or praying according to the Talmud? Or possibly was he talking to his fellow farmers, Lasuach from the word siach, plants? Whichever way, when it comes to finding a wife for Isaac, Isaac is not there. Isaac is sends an agent, and there's somebody else. In fact, the person who is who is doing all the activity there is not the bridegroom, but is the bride. It is Rebecca who waters the flocks, who is the one who draws the water for all the camels, and we get the sense of Rebecca as a very hospitable bundle of activity. And Yitzchak, Isaac, is nowhere to be found. So, once again, a difficult story. The probably one of the most amazing Bible stories that we all know is the scene in which Isaac is blind in his old age. And Yaakov and Esav, Jacob and Esau, come to get the blessing. And where Jacob supplants Esau, he come and tricks his father. His father tells Esau to go out and get him some hunts, get him some meat. And what he does is he comes and tricks his father. And once again, the sense of Yitzchak, of Isaac, as a sort of blind, frail, trickable individual, is a very distressing one. And if we sort of sum all of this up, he's bound at the Akedah. He doesn't go to find a wife for himself. His wife seems far more industrious and active than him. And then in that last scene where he is blind and where he is tricked, what sort of an impression does this man give? Who is he? So this is a pretty difficult scene. Now let me maybe compact this problem, because when we look at, so there is only one chapter which really concerns Yitzchak himself, chapter 26, and when we open this, we also see, seems to be, a strong theme of passivity, should we call it, on Isaac's part. Let me explain. There is a famine in the land. It opens chapter 26. And it even references Abraham. Avivan, the famine which was in the time of Abraham. And Isaac goes down to Avimelech, the Philistine king, to a place called Gerar. Now, why is he going down to the land of the Philistines? We might think that he is going to copy his father, who in times of famine, Abraham went down to Egypt. And yet, God says to him, do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land, and I will bless you. In other words, once again, Isaac's not, he's confined to the land of Israel. The rabbis say that he, after having been almost sacrificed during the binding of Isaac, during the Akedah, he is an Olat Mima. He is not allowed to leave the land of Israel. He is holy. And then he says, and I will expand your offspring like the stars of the heavens, and I will grant your children all of these lands, and through you will be blessed all the nations of the world. Why? Ekev asher shama Avraham b'koli. Why are you going to get all these things? Because Abraham listened to my voice. We would expect it to say, because you listened to our voice. But it says, because Abraham listened to our voice. And this is in verse 5 of the chapter, but you see it again in verse 24, where God appears to him and says, I am the God of Abraham, your father. What about your God? And he says, I will make your seed numerous because of Abraham, my servant. What about Isaac? What is he? He's not there. Moreover, in this chapter, we find Isaac digging wells. And it keeps on emphasizing that Isaac digs the wells which were dug in the days of Abraham, however the Philistines had stopped them up. And if I summarize everything I've tried to say in this first few minutes, I've actually painted a rather negative, passive image of Isaac as the patriarch who is to be skipped over. The patriarch who can't do anything for himself, and even when he does do something, it is always by virtue of Abraham, his father, but not on his own account. What's going on? Let me quote a little. I mentioned Rabbi Steinsaltz, so let me mention a little bit of what he says. And he says the following. This is from a book, Biblical Images, a wonderful book. He says, it is known that the sons of great fathers, talented and significant as they may be in their own right, have to contend with the parental glory, and from the beginning feel themselves as inadequate, burdened with a lesser or greater degrees of helplessness. This apparently was Isaac's essential problem, to find his own place in a world dominated by the genius of his father. He did the only thing left for him to do. He carried on, and the task of the successor has always been one of the most unrewarding of all the tasks in history. It has often been said that all beginnings are difficult, but continuation can be more difficult still. The capacity to persist is no less important than the power to begin. In all the significant revolutions of history, it is evident that the first generation, the founding fathers, usually have to struggle against formidable objective forces. But the verdict of history, whether it was a glorious victory or merely a passing episode, lies with the successors, the generation who have to fix and stabilize the revolution. One does not ascribe to the second generation the same glorious qualities that capture the imagination. The son's task is to hold steady and not to create, or as the Bible story puts it, they have to dig again the wells that their father dug before them that have become blocked up. Isaac's task, therefore, even if lacking in splendor or legendary exploits, is of utmost value and significance. These are the generations of Isaac. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac not only justifying Abraham, but establishing him forever. So, what Rav Steinsaltz is essentially saying is that Yitzchak is characterized with a passivity, a lack of dynamic activity, but this is indeed his challenge, his legacy. In fact, later Steinsaltz says that that's what attracted Isaac to Esau. Esau was a man of the field. He was the person who Isaac was never allowed to be, because, as he says, if every generation makes a revolution, then you never establish tradition. A tradition is by the fact that I do what my father does and what his father did. And that's, if Abraham made a revolution, then Isaac has to continue in his path. Or the rabbis say that Abraham was the one who prayed the morning prayer as the sun comes up. Isaac prayed the afternoon prayer. In the afternoon, we're a bit lethargic. We're ending our day. We're continuing what we did all day. We're ending our day. Isaac has that drudgery about him. He has to continue with the rising sun as the day's work that Abraham has continued. That's what he has to continue throughout his, that Abraham has instigated. He has to continue through his day. And this is a very, very, very difficult task. Maybe what we call the gvura of Yitzchak, or the pachad of Yitzchak. This sense of Ezehu gibor ha-koveshet Yitzro, who is mighty. He has the quality of gvura, and gvura means tenacity. He is who is mighty, who quashes his desires. He has to quash his desires and just continue with what Abraham has done. And that is the way Steinsaltz portrays Isaac. Another 20th century thinker, Rabbi Soloveitchik, who wrote what I'm going to read in the 1960s, when, and if you can think of what's happening in the world of American religion in 1960s, maybe the post-immigrant generation, he talks about the name Isaac. Isaac's birth was connected with the laughter, says Rav Soloveitchik. And he says, people laughed at the event. They did not believe that Isaac would inherit Abraham, that he, a young lad of the new generation, would continue to carry Abraham's visions and laws. He would also engage in building altars and calling on the name of God. They laughed at Abraham's dreams that his son would give his life for Torah and fight for the sanctity of Abraham's house. Later on, he says, years passed by, and those who laughed at Isaac began to query and ask, is Isaac really sincere in his efforts to resuscitate Abraham's work? And Isaac dug the wells of water which they dug in the days of Abraham his father. The same Gemara, the same Shulchan Aruch, the same Shabbat, the same laws of divorce. Who would have foreseen that the young, modern Isaac would also believe in the institution of Chalitza, that he would demand a kosher kitchen and fight for religious education and the like? Who would have guessed that he would speak with the same language that the old Abraham spoke as the author of the Shulchan Aruch, as the Ramah, the Vilna Gaon, or Reb Chaim of Volozhin? The way Rabbi Soloveitchik, as a masterful darshan, as a masterful giver of sermons, put it, was that Isaac represents that continuity of Judaism that's sometimes difficult in a new reality, in a new country, but holding on to the old traditions. However, I have to say that for me, I'm not sure this is really enough. I'm not sure that this is really enough for me to appreciate the character of Isaac just on the basis of his continuation. And I think I've searched in chapter 26, the chapter of Isaac, for some sort of new edge. And this is what I would like to share with you. When we look at chapter 26, we see Isaac as a farmer. I don't know how you imagine Isaac, maybe blind, maybe very pale, who knows. But it says there, Isaac sowed in that in the land and reaped a hundredfold the same year. In other words, if he put one grain into the ground, he got back 100. The Lord blessed him, and the man grew and continued to grow until he was great. He acquired flocks and herds and a large household. The Philistines envied him, and the Philistines stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of his father Abraham, filling them with earth. And Avimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us. You have become too strong for us." So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the Wadi of Grar and dwelled there. Isaac dug anew the wells which had been dug in the days of his father. He gave them names that his father had given them. The first name of the first well was called Controversy, Eshek, because they contended with him. The second one was called Enmity, Hatred, Sitna. And the third one was called Rehovot, as he said, "Now at last the Lord has granted us ample space, and we've been fruitful in the land." The first thing that we should notice here is that Yitzchak, Isaac, in fact does take a new path untrodden by Abraham, his father. And what do I mean by this? Yitzchak is a farmer, and a very successful farmer too. What do I mean? What is the significance of this change in role? Abraham was a shepherd. He wandered from place to place. He was a nomad with no permanent dwelling place. And therefore Abraham's life is characterized by his walking, lech lecha, his wandering. He never settles down. He never remains in a particular location. When his wife dies, he doesn't even have any real estate to bury her. However, Yitzchak is different from all this. Isaac is a man of the land, with a desert suntan, with bulging muscles. He farms the land, he grips the land, he argues over the land. And a farmer is fixed in place. The wells don't move. The fields do not move. Maybe the clearest representation of this shift is the comparison between the two namings of the city Be'er Sheva. Abraham makes a covenant with Avimelech, and so does Isaac. Abraham makes a covenant and names the city Be'er Sheva because they made a covenant on 7 sheep. But with Isaac, when Isaac makes a covenant with the same king, Avimelech, or maybe his son, we don't know, what is the 7? It's not 7 sheep, but 7 wells. Wells, a fixed mark on the landscape where you dig deep into the land and you find its water. Already the rabbis talk about how Yitzchak is connected to the notion of a field, the idea of that he prays in the field. But maybe I'd like to suggest that the 3 patriarchs, in a sense, represent 3 as the word of. Av means a father, but it also means an archetype, as in the 39 Avot Melacha of Shabbat, 39 categories of work. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are people, but they represent ideas to us. And in a sense, each of the Avot, each of the patriarchs, represent 3 models of relating to the land. Abraham is the classic Ole. He begins in Mesopotamia and migrates to Eretz Yisrael, to Israel. He has all of that promise, all that hardship, finding his place and what have you. Isaac is a different paradigm. Isaac is the person who stays in the land. As we mentioned, he's not allowed to leave the land. He's born in the land, spends every day of his life in the land, and dies in the land. Jacob is the one who leaves to Mesopotamia and returns, goes down to Egypt, and then comes back even after his death. These are 3 models of relationship with the land. And if I come back to Isaac, he's the one who is integrally connected to Eretz Yisrael. He lives exclusively in the land. And his is a process of deepening and establishing a foothold in the land, admittedly solidifying Abraham's aliyah, his move, but giving it a broad foundation. But it's a different reality. And therefore, I think that we can picture Isaac not as some sort of pallid, passive character. In fact, when you read through chapter 26, this is what happens. Time after time, people try to claim that the water that he has dug is not his. And he doesn't get into confrontation. He stands his ground. And in fact, the last time when he finds, he digs a well, and it says, just one second, let me find the right line. Vayachbaru avdei Yitzchak benachal v'yimsu sham be'er mayim chayim. This is a be'er, a well, but it is of mayim chayim. It's water of a spring. In other words, nobody can claim it's not his. He digs a new water source. The first one, as I said, is called controversy, argument. The second is called hatred. But the third one is called rechavot, a ample space, breadth, expanse. Why? Because God has been generous to us. Ufarinu ba'aretz, we've been fruitful in the land. And it's at this point, only after he shows, he's dug his sixth well, time after time, showing his tenacity. Suddenly, along comes Avimelech, the local lord, and says, I would like to make a covenant with you. I'd like to make peace with you. And he says to him, he confronts him and says, but you wanted me to leave. You asked me to go. And he says, well, I've seen how powerful you are. I've seen that you're not going anywhere, and I'd like to be your friend. And maybe this really does give us a sense of Isaac. Admittedly, yes, it's Gevurah. It's his sense of tenacity. It's his sense of holding on. But he doesn't only hold on to everything that he has received. He digs his own wells. He makes his own way. He does things in his own style. He doesn't only continue what Abraham does, but he gives it a firmer base and he solidifies it. As Steinsaltz said, every revolution, in order to become a tradition, needs a second generation. And we, who are not the first generation of Judaism, but maybe the 100th or 200th or 1,000th, who knows, our role is to indeed continue the tradition while still at the same time digging our own wells, finding our own fresh water, somehow manage to find that balance between receiving what there is to receive from the previous generations, but also at the same time managing to carve out our own place in order to apply those life-giving waters always in a new landscape, in a new territory. Wishing everybody a good week and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.